Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here! Right now, get up to 80% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, seasonal decor, and way more. All at Wayfair. These are Wayfair's best deals of the year. From seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, enjoy fast and free shipping with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 80% off during Wayfair's Black Friday sale. Now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Welcome, everyone, to the News Network Company, where today we're diving deep into a year that's already shaping up to be one of the most transformative in Japan's recent history. I mean, honestly, you look at the headlines and it's just one major event after another.
It really is, isn't it? From political tremors to economic roller coasters, and even these incredible cultural moments, it feels like Japan is absolutely at a crossroads, balancing tradition with this incredibly rapid pace of change.
And it's not just the big, obvious stuff. There's a real undercurrent of innovation, especially in tech and sustainability, that's defining this period too. It's like the world is finally seeing a new side of Japan, even as it grapples with its core issues.
Absolutely, Nia. Globally, eyes are on Tokyo, and more broadly on Japan's foreign policy and economic direction. The stakes feel higher than ever, given the geopolitical landscape. It's a fascinating study in a nation adjusting its global posture in real time.
Well, let's start with the seismic political shift. Kantai Takaichi, her rise to becoming Japan's first female prime minister, is truly monumental. After a pretty tumultuous time for the LDP, her election as party leader in October was a clear signal of a new era. What are your initial thoughts on this, Mrs. News?
It's huge, Mr. News. I mean, think about the symbolism alone. Japan, a society often seen as very traditional, now has a woman at the helm. It's a powerful statement, though I know her politics are quite conservative, aligning very much with former Prime Minister Abe's legacy. It's not just a gender milestone, it's a political direction too.
Yeah, it's not just a first female PM story, right? She's openly stated her commitment to Abenomics, pushing for aggressive monetary policy, big government spending, and seriously beefing up strategic areas like AI and semiconductors. For someone like me, in the tech space, that last part sounds promising, but the overall economic strategy is what everyone's watching, especially with the global inflation pressures.
And beyond the domestic economic agenda, her hardline stance on defense policy and her association with historical revisionism have really sent ripples, not just among her coalition partners, but critically among neighboring countries. It raises questions about Japan's longstanding alliances and could spark some pretty intense debates about inclusivity in Japan's regional and international politics. It's a delicate balance, trying to project strength while maintaining peace.
Absolutely. And those ripples, Zori, were immediately felt in the markets. Her victory triggered a pretty sharp fall in the yen against the dollar, which in turn prompted a rush into overseas assets. Yet, paradoxically, the Nikkei stock average actually rose 5%, driven by expectations of a boost for export companies. It's a mixed bag of reactions.
Mixed bag is right. While the big corporations and exporters might see a benefit, on the ground, for everyday households, a weaker yen often means higher import costs, right? We're already seeing soaring costs of living, and voters are deeply, deeply concerned about rising prices and stagnant wages. It's a difficult tightrope walk for the new administration.
But on the flip side, the surge in major stocks like Toyota, and especially AI and defense-related companies, points to a clear investment direction. If Takaichi really pushes for budget expansion in technology, that could be a huge accelerant for Japan's innovation sector. It's a double-edged sword kind of situation, you know? What's good for tech might not immediately translate to relief for the average consumer.
And let's not forget the Bank of Japan's role in all this. The BOJ hinting at a possible interest rate hike later this year adds another layer of uncertainty. This directly impacts Takaichi's Abenomics approach, which historically relied on ultra-loose monetary policy. The BOJ's policy management remains a critical focal point, and its decisions could either bolster or complicate the new prime minister's economic agenda. it shows a fundamental tension between political ambition and central bank independence.
Precisely. Now, moving from economics to the broader social fabric, Mrs. News, you touched upon the soaring cost of living. Beyond that, Japan is also grappling with persistent demographic pressures. What are you hearing, what are you seeing on the ground regarding these social concerns?
It's profound, Mr. News. The aging society isn't a new issue, but it feels like it's reaching a critical point alongside these price hikes. Families are struggling. Young people are facing unprecedented challenges in career prospects and housing. The government has announced stimulus packages and promises for income equality and social welfare, but honestly, there's a lot of skepticism. People want to see real, tangible reform, not just temporary fixes, especially with crucial parliamentary elections on the horizon.
From my perspective, among my peers, there's a huge anxiety about the future. Will there be enough social security? Will wages ever catch up to inflation? We're also seeing a lot of discussion about how technology, like AI, could either exacerbate or alleviate some of these demographic pressures. Can automation fill gaps in the workforce, or will it just create new social disparities? It's a very real concern for my generation.
It's a global challenge, certainly, but amplified in Japan given its demographic profile. From an international perspective, Japan's approach to these issues could serve as a case study for other aging nations. The efficacy of their social welfare reforms and how they integrate technological solutions to these deep-seated problems will be closely watched. It's about maintaining social cohesion amidst dramatic shifts.
And speaking of global perspectives, let's pivot to Japan's diplomatic dynamics. The relationship with world powers is always delicate, but with Prime Minister Takaichi at the helm and a potential return of former President Trump to the U.S. political stage, there's a lot to unpack. Zori, what are the key considerations here?
The Trump factor is huge. Takaichi has already emphasized continuity on the tariff and investment agreement with President Trump, clearly preparing for a key summit in Asia. This signals a proactive approach to maintaining strong U.S. ties, regardless of who is in the White House. But then you have new defense exercises near Taiwan, and a focus on strategically important islands. These actions garner international attention and highlight Japan's evolving security posture, especially with increasing competition in the Indo-Pacific. It's a strong message about national interests, but one that needs careful management.
It makes you wonder, though, how the Japanese public feels about this more assertive stance. While security is paramount, there's always a strong undercurrent of pacifism and a desire for peaceful resolution. I think there's a societal tension between needing to protect their interests and maintaining a sense of regional stability. It's a delicate balance for the government to strike with its own people.
Yeah, and from a youth perspective, while we understand the need for national security, we're also very aware of how these regional tensions can impact global supply chains, trade, and even cultural exchange. We want to see Japan as a leader in innovation and collaboration, not just in military might. It's about soft power too, you know?
Absolutely, Nia. And on the note of collaboration and innovation, let's talk about some of the more positive outward-looking events of 2025. Expo 2025 in Osaka, for instance, sounds like a massive undertaking. Mrs. News, what's the buzz around this?
Oh, it's incredibly exciting. From April to October, Osaka will be the world stage. It's all about innovation and sustainability, healthcare, and technology. And with participation from all over the world, even a partnership with Nordics for Future Battery Science and Climate Action, it truly reflects Japan's commitment to being a global player in solving some of humanity's biggest challenges. It's a huge boost for national pride and tourism.
And for tech, it's massive. I'm particularly excited about the sustainability and healthcare tech showcases. Imagine the new ideas, the cross-pollination of innovation. Expo 2025 isn't just a spectacle. It's a launch pad for future collaborations. Plus, with the World Athletics Championships and the Tokyo Deaflympics, it shows Japan's commitment to global inclusion and sporting excellence. It's a busy year for the event calendar, which is great for showing off Japan.
It underscores Japan's capacity for meticulous planning and execution on a grand scale. The Expo is a prime example of leveraging soft power, attracting foreign investment, and fostering international goodwill, all while showcasing cutting-edge technologies. It's a counter-narrative to some of the more contentious political or economic headlines, projecting a forward-looking, collaborative image to the world.
A very important point. And amid all this change and innovation, traditional cultural events continue to anchor Japan's identity. From cherry blossom festivals to sumo, local summer fireworks, and the glamorous festivals of Kyoto and Osaka, these traditions are clearly not going anywhere.
Thank goodness. Those are the threads that hold society together. In a year of such rapid change and uncertainty, having those familiar, beautiful traditions, those shared experiences, is incredibly important for people's well-being and sense of community. It's what makes Japan, Japan, you know?
Absolutely. My friends and I still look forward to those summer fireworks. It's a perfect blend of old and new. You can be discussing the latest AI breakthrough 1 minute and then planning which festival you're going to next. It's that balance that makes Japan so unique and appealing to younger generations, too.
It's a testament to the resilience of culture. These traditions provide a stable foundation from which the nation can navigate the complexities of modernity. They offer a unique window into Japan's soul and are a vital part of its global appeal, complementing its technological prowess.
Indeed. Now, as we reflect on 2025, it also marks a couple of sobering milestones. It's 30 years since the Great Hanshin Awaji earthquake and the Aum Shinrikyo sarin incident. These events remind us of Japan's resilience, but also the ongoing need for preparedness and vigilance. Mrs. News, how are these being remembered and what lessons are being drawn?
These are profoundly significant anniversaries. The Great Hanshin Awaji earthquake taught Japan so much about disaster preparedness, community resilience, and the importance of rapid response. And the Aum Shinrikyo incident, that was a dark chapter, a stark reminder of the need for vigilance against extremism. These anniversaries serve as a powerful impetus for strengthening disaster planning and reflecting on those painful lessons. They're not just dates, they're calls to action.
And speaking of vigilance, we've also seen this large-scale cyber attack on the Asahi Group causing widespread disruptions. That really highlights the modern threats we face. We're building this incredibly interconnected digital society, but with that comes massive responsibility for digital security. It's a new kind of disaster preparedness that needs just as much attention as earthquakes, I think.
Absolutely, Nia. The cyber attack illustrates that security concerns have evolved beyond traditional physical threats. In a world increasingly reliant on digital infrastructure, national security now encompasses cyber resilience. Japan, like many developed nations, is confronting this new frontier, and how it responds will set precedents for critical infrastructure protection globally.
So, looking at everything we've discussed, the political upheaval, the economic shifts, social pressures, diplomatic tightropes, and these landmark events and anniversaries, it really feels like 2025 is a truly pivotal year for Japan. What's your take on the road ahead, Zori?
The road ahead is complex, fraught with both significant challenges and immense possibilities. With Takaichi's rise, Japan is clearly charting a more assertive domestic and international course. The world is watching to see how this translates into real policy outcomes, especially concerning social welfare and its role in regional security. It's a delicate act of balancing national interests with global responsibilities.
I think for my generation, we're looking for genuine solutions to long-standing problems. We want to see innovation applied to social issues, economic growth that's inclusive, and a Japan that's both technologically advanced and deeply rooted in its culture. It's a year of immense potential if the right choices are made, especially in investing in future-proof industries and youth.
For the average Japanese citizen, it's about hope. Hope for stability, hope for a better quality of life, hope that the government truly addresses their concerns about rising prices and an aging society. This year feels like a moment where the future of Japanese society is truly being shaped, and everyone is invested in seeing positive, tangible change.
And that balance between past, present, and future, tradition and innovation, domestic concerns, and global scrutiny is what makes Japan's story in 2025 so compelling. It's a chronicle of change, progressive yet fraught, and certainly one that will define its trajectory for years to come. Thank you all for shedding so much light on this fascinating moment in Japan's history. And thank you, our listeners, for joining us on Rising Sun, Shifting Tides. We'll see you next time.